Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is John Jones. John is a retired federal law enforcement officer and a Navy hospital corpsman. He's also the author of the book, A Higher Calling, which offers first responders, veterans, and military personnel a biblical guide to the demanding work that they are called to do. So welcome to the show, John. I'm glad to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. This conversation, I think, is going to be very helpful to a lot of people. We've talked religion, we talked things like that a little bit on the podcast before, but I think after having read your book, I think this conversation is going to be really impactful. It's going to help a lot of people. And as we were saying before we even started recording, even if there are people out there who are not particularly religious, they're not Christian or whatever, they still are going to get something out of this conversation, even out of your book. So for the listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, just so the listeners have kind of an idea who we're talking about here?
Sure. So I graduated high school early, went in the Navy back January of 92. So I'm an older guy. Like you said, I was a Navy corpsman, ended up with the Marines, did a combat deployment to Somalia with the Marine Corps, spent 6.5 years in the Navy and was med boarded out. When I got med boarded, I wanted to do 20 years. That was my plan when I went in. I have several friends who we were friends before we went in the military. Several of them did 20 years or more, and I didn't get that opportunity. But from there, I went local law enforcement. I started off as a corrections officer and then quickly moved into because the department I worked for, the corrections was not sworn. It was a civilian position. I know there's a lot of departments out there where sworn deputies do corrections. Mine was not like that. But I got into the sworn law enforcement side on the civilian side. Did that for 5.5 years. And at the time we had six kids under 10. Huh. So yeah, but you know, and civilian law enforcement is a tough, tough job. But I decided to try and go back into the medical field. And I realized there is a massive difference between military medicine and civilian medicine. The things I was able to do as a corpsman were not even on the scope of things that I would be able to do, even in like nursing, some of the things. But regardless, I left the sheriff's department, tried the medical field. It didn't work out. So I ended up going to the federal route, got back into law enforcement on the federal side. I started off with the VA and then moved over, got hired in as a federal air marshal. And I did that up until last month where I ended up retiring. So 92 to 2013. So 30 years of military first responder experience.
Wow. That is quite the career. And going through all of the different things that you went through and that you experienced, you do get a sort of unique view in the sense that you, and not to say that no one else has done this either, but you have both the military experience and you have the law enforcement experience, and you have both of those worlds in your point of view, in your focus.
Right.
And so I think that really puts you in a good place to be the author of the book that you wrote. And I do want to talk about that book. And again, for the listeners, the book is titled A Higher Calling, A Biblical Guide for First Responders, Military, and Veterans. And so with that book, first, because I know we're talking about a lot of different categories, you know, first responders, right, military, veterans. I just want to, for the listeners, I'm going to lump those all together. And if I use one of the terms, it's interchangeable in
right,
the context of this conversation, because, you know, I don't want anyone to think that we're excluding the veterans when we're talking about first responders or vice versa or whatever the situation is. So let's talk about the book. Tell us, what was the spark that led you to writing this book?
Primarily my wife. My wife is always, you know, she's my she's always been, she's my best coach that I've ever had. So I was mentoring individual people, people at work who had been in combat, military, or obviously law enforcement. I have several family members who have been active in the global war on terror. My son is a staff sergeant in the Army, just got back from Iraq 6 months ago. Before he was in the Army, he was a CB and did a SOCOM deployment as a CB to Africa. I have a nephew who was an Anglican Marine in Afghanistan, nieces, nephews who were Navy, Army. One of my nieces was actually in the medical field and assigned to a special operations team in Iraq as a support element, obviously. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people that I know that are close to me that I was, so I was mentoring them. Because when I did, even though Somalia was not a sustained combat operation like what we've seen since the war on terror, it was unusual for somebody in my time in the military to have a combat action ribbon or a CIB for the Army. That was unusual, right? So to have that, they didn't have the services set up like they do now for mental health, post-deployment services and stuff like that. They didn't have that. It was just you and your buddies trying to figure out how to cope with what you dealt with, right?
Right. And when you get a bunch of guys together who are trying to figure that stuff out, who aren't trained on what to do, what the right things are to do, you get a lot of various solutions that maybe aren't quite the healthiest solutions either, right?
Right. And especially, you know, when I was in Somalia, I had just turned 21. I was still 20 when I left on that deployment, right? Mm-hmm. And I had already been in the Navy for 3 years, right? So you don't have the coping mechanisms anyway. So, and you got a bunch of other people who are 20, 21, 22. I mean, your staff sergeant might be 30 and he's an old man, you know? Right. Yeah. So, but you know, this is where like the book, like this one, you know, a lot of people have read On Combat and On Killing, and you know, Lieutenant Colonel Grossman is phenomenal in his approach and everything that he knows and has studied. He even has, I don't know if you knew this, he has a book called On Spiritual Combat. Okay. So, but whereas On Spiritual Combat is more of like 30 days where you take these lessons and apply them over the course of a period of time, my wife kept hearing me complain about how there wasn't anything specifically for people who just wanted to deal with the actual topics associated with these professions. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where it came from, how it developed, and how each one is actually identified and you know, obviously it's not going to be exhaustive, but things that you experience based off of trauma or like, you know, just training or relationships or what happens when you're done, you know, when you retire, you know?
Well, and so you provided me with a copy of the book in advance. So I was able to read through the book and you do cover a lot of those things that everybody deals with. Doesn't matter what the job is, there is training involved, whether it's military or law enforcement or EMTs, paramedics, like firefighters. Right. So there's training. You know, like you don't just right. walk on the job and just, oh yeah, I'm good to go. I got this. Right. I don't need to keep on training. There's training involved. There's relationships that you develop with your coworkers, with, you know, for law enforcement, the people who in your communities that you might be interacting with on a daily basis. You know, just there's just different relationships that go on. And then there's the dark side of the job where there's going to be grief. There's going to be death and losses and things like that. And you cover all of these things, which I thought was tremendous for having one book that was able to consolidate all these difficult topics to cover all in one compact book to get all of that information across. So let's kind of start with some of the things that you covered in there. So let's talk about like the importance of training. You know, you talk about how it's not just the physical training. Obviously, there's that component involved. There's a firearms proficiency, the physical things like hitting the gym, martial arts, or whatever you may do for on the physical side, but also making time for things like prayer and spiritual well-being as well. And that sort of training. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of this overall training, including the spiritual side of things?
Yeah, obviously, like what you were saying, and what any veteran or, you know, first responder knows, like you said, it's not just the initial training, it's the ongoing training. And what that does, the training provides a base for you to perform in high stress, high anxiety, chaotic situations. It's the same for your spiritual training as well, prayer, reading the Bible, interacting with other believers. That provides you a basis for when you're in a high stress, chaotic environment, an environment that you might start questioning why, you know, these bad things are going on. You have that base to fall back on. So it provides you a spiritual resilience to help mitigate the emotional and psychological factors that develop with those high stress situations.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, is it going to necessarily not let those issues develop? Not necessarily, but it'll give you that base to help you meet those. That's all I was going to say. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I was reading this part of the book, I like to just kind of make analogies to other things. So that it just helps me understand things and everything. And the way I was thinking of it was very much like when you go to the gym, you lift weights, right? At first, if you've never lifted weights before in your life, at first, you're not going to be thrown on hundreds of pounds of weight to be able to lift. You're just not going to be able to do it. Your body's not going to be capable of lifting all of that. So you start low and you build up to the point where you're able to lift the heavier weights. And a lot of this, on the spiritual side, it kind of resonated with me in that there's going to be that time when you open up the Bible for the very first time, right? And it doesn't have to be the Bible. It could be whatever it is your religion is, and you know, we all have different beliefs and things like that. But let's just use the Bible right now, the Christian Bible, for the example, for purposes of this conversation, right? You may never have opened it up before. And there's a lot of questions that will pop up when you open up that Bible. It's not going to be an easy read very first time. But as you do it more and more and more, and you are searching for certain answers, you know, and we'll talk about some of these other things later on, I'm sure. But things like, you know, as a law enforcement officer or a military service member, is it okay for me to kill somebody, you know, in the act of doing my job? And you're trying to find these answers. It's not going to be easy the very first time you open up that book, but as you read more and you learn more and you start to understand more, things will start to get easier. Just the same way as when you are consistent and you're lifting the weights at the gym, those weights get easier. So that way you can handle the heavier topics or the heavier weights later on. Right. And that's how it made sense to me as I was reading what you were talking about is, you know, you kind of have to give yourself a little leeway here. Like in the beginning, no, it's not going to be easy, but the more you do it, the better you'll get at it and the easier it will become. And when you need it, just like with the weights, lifting the weights, when you need to move something heavy, you'll be able to do that a whole lot easier with that physical training that you had done. And when you need to deal with those emotional things, spiritual questions that are inevitably going to come up through the course of doing these jobs, you're going to be able to handle those a whole lot easier too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the spiritual aspect of it, a lot of people say they don't think that a spiritual aspect is necessarily important, but it is. Everybody has that kind of ingrained knowing that your spirit can be damaged, whether you believe it's a Christian kind of thing or a religious kind of thing. your psyche, right? Let's call it that. If it's kind of similar, your psyche and your spirit, right? It's kind of interchangeable when you think of it like that. That's why people get damaged, have psychological traumas, because there is there's no physical damage being done. Maybe now that we know a little bit more about brain research, yeah, there's a little bit of damage done to the brain when these things happen, but your psyche, your spirit does get damaged. So just like you were saying with the weights or martial arts, right? You're not going to go on your first day into a martial arts class and do, you know, a jumping, spinning back kick, you know, kind of thing. It's just not going to. And if you do, you're probably not going to do it again because you're going to hurt yourself.
You're going to hurt yourself pretty bad. Yeah. Right. If you do that.
Yeah.
It's not going to work very well.
Right. So it's the same kind of thing. When I first went to the academy for the sheriff's department, and this was back in 2000, right? They were saying even back then, if you're religious, continue your religious activities, continue going to church and things like that. Because even back then, they were seeing that, you know, officers that were going into law enforcement specific, they saw the officers who fell away from those religious practices had a harder time dealing with the things that they had seen on the street and that kind of thing than people who had never actually been to church. They had their own hard time dealing with it. So, but I guess to go back to your question is whether you think there's a spiritual aspect or not, there is. And the elements of what the Bible says will help with mitigating those damaging elements.
Right. And I think with anybody, whether you're an atheist or you're a devout, you know, Christian or what, doesn't matter where you fall on the spectrum of the spiritual scale here. There's a few things I think we can all agree upon. And a lot of that is taught in the Bible as far as, you know, just being a good person, you know, helping other people and, you know, being faithful and true to the people in your lives and all that kind of stuff. Like, I think those are just kind of common themes we can just agree on. Like, those are good things, good qualities to have. And if we flex those muscles, if you will, and we emphasize that and practice that and learn more about that, that's just going to help us become better, more resilient people when the time comes when we need that, regardless of where you stand on religion, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now you talk also about relationships, both the professional relationships and how you conduct yourself at work with the people that you interact with, coworkers or whatever, and as well as the personal relationships and how you interact with your family. And you know, there were some important points with regards to how you interact with the public and coworkers, as well as how you bring home and share your day with your family. You know, You had a terrible day as a firefighter or paramedic or whatever, and you saw death and devastation and all this stuff. Like, how much of that you bring home and bring it to your family and talk about it at the dinner table? Like, all that kind of stuff is, you know, that there's a fine line balancing act. Like, obviously you don't want to bottle everything up inside, but you also don't want to be traumatizing your 6-year-old either if you're talking about that kind of stuff, right? So can you talk about those relationships, both on the professional side and the personal side, and kind of where to go with all of that stuff?
So professional side is just that. Be professional. You got into this profession with whatever it be because you had this calling to go and serve other people in some capacity. And ultimately, that's kind of where your heart is going. That's what you feel like you need to do. And a lot of people get caught up in the misconception that what you do is who you are. Right. And you see that a lot. You saw that in the military, I'm sure. And you do see it a lot in the first responder community. Yeah, a lot of what you do is who is the a makeup of who you are, but it's not who you are. Your professional relationships are just that. They're the people you work with. They're the people that you serve on the in the community. They're the, you know, store owners that you're dealing with who have just been robbed or what have you. And being professional in those relationships just means acting the way that you would want to be treated in those. You could be empathetic, right? I talk about it in the book a little bit, how does it as a law enforcement officer, let's say, does it really diminish your ability to perform your job to, you know, take 5 minutes out of your day and have a chat with that disabled vet that's sitting outside Walmart every day? Right. Or, you know, does it diminish your capacity to do your job to just, you know, ask the homeless person that you might have to, even though you have to remove them from that strip mall or whatever, again, do you have to be, you know, harsh toward them? I mean, obviously it's situationally dependent, but, you know, can you just say, hey, you know, how you doing? You know, is there any, what can I help you with, kind of thing?
Right. And you even talked about language too, as far as, you know, is the way that you conduct yourself, you know, just the way you talk to people, you know, do you need the vulgar language? You know, in some cases, maybe, maybe it's appropriate, but other cases, you know, maybe it's not. And that was, I thought that was interesting as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that's in the book is I talked to a bunch of coworker friends, both law enforcement or first responder, military veterans, and they were kind enough to provide stories and about different things that they've experienced as well. And a good friend of mine is a CHP officer. He didn't want to provide a story, but he told me a story that he said I can use for it. Right. And he talked about how from the time he became a CHP officer, the entire time he's been CHP, he's never used foul language at work. And people make fun of him. Some people make fun of him, but most of the people, after the course of days and weeks and months and years of working with him, have come up to him and been like, hey, you know, it's actually kind of nice to, you know, we can joke with you. You're funny. You have a great sense of humor. You know, you can, you don't have to be a stick in the mud to not use coarse language. Right.
Right.
But, you know, it really presents a different kind of perception of how you can be in this environment or in these professions without having to use. Now, I also mentioned there are times where you may have to, because there are certain times where that's the only thing people are going to react to. And, you know, in the military, it's actually the same in the first responder field. Because there's a lot of military veterans in the first responder field, all of the first responder fields. The Air Marshal Service is one of the highest percentage of veterans in the federal law enforcement field. Wow. And it was great because it was almost like being back in the military with the joking and the interactions and the teeth, you know, just that ribbing and giving each other grief all the time, right? It was great. But you get that foul language, it's not offensive. In foul language doesn't become, it's not offensive in the military. It's just part of your everyday language and speech, right? Right. So, but getting to the point where you don't necessarily have to use it in your everyday language and speech, but still, you know, you may have to use it with suspects, with Vic, even with Vic sometimes, you know, car accidents or something like that, where people are, they're not in their right minds because of the amount of stress that they're undergoing. Right.
Right. Exactly. And it's, I think it's important that you mentioned that and how, you know, it does present yourself as a different type of person that is, I don't want to say it elevates you on a different level or whatever, but you stand out from the crowd, right? And you're able to accomplish the job without just, you know, the low level, you know, just kind of vulgar
right.
language.
The vulgarity isn't tends necessary. To be vulgar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so it was interesting. I kind of wanted to point that out because I did like that, you know, how you pointed that out as well. What about on the personal side? You know, when you come home from work and or come home after a deployment or right. whatever it is that you are coming back from, you are now in, you're interacting with your family, whether it's a spouse or children or parents or other, you know, even other, you know, neighbors and friends and stuff like that.
Right.
You're interacting with them. How do we do this in a way that's not going to, you know, really traumatize everybody else in your right. life, but also respect the fact that you might need to talk about some of the things that
absolutely.
You
yeah.
have going on.
Yeah. Now, again, what the recommendations I have in the book are just recommendations, right? Obviously, every person's situation is going to be dependent on their spouse, their family, but everybody can benefit from creating a system. You know, you can come home from a bad day, talk to your spouse about the things that you're willing to talk about. Because your spouse wants to know. That's one of the things that I've experienced. When I would come home and shut out my spouse, my wife, that starts to build. The things that you are experiencing and having to deal with now become a wedge between you and your spouse. And your spouse is supposed to be your strongest individual relationship on earth. So if you're intentionally developing a situation where a wedge is being pushed into that relationship where there doesn't have to be one, that's not going to be good, right? At the same time, though, you don't want to come home and just be like, oh, it was horrible, you know, four car pile up, or, you know, we had a four car accident, you know, three people dead, one was decapitated, which is stuff that you can experience in a normal shift as a first responder, right? You don't necessarily want to come home and scar your kids like that, right? So
right.
You also don't want to keep your kids in the dark from some of the bad things that are out there, but you want to do it in a way, you want to explain things to them in a way that is, one, age appropriate, and two, that you know your kids the best. So if you know that your kid is a little bit more mature, like we had six kids, our youngest was able to mature a lot faster than some of the other kids because not only did she have us to guide her, she had her five older siblings guiding her as well, right? So she was able to mature, I think, a little bit faster than others, right? But at the same time, even though she's mature, I don't necessarily want to come home and tell her, hey, you know, there's, you know, a sexual predator out on the loose, you know, watch out for, you know, but you want to make sure that she's safe and understands that there are people out there that might want to harm her in an appropriate way. But ultimately, your spouse is your number one relationship on this planet. So if you, especially early on, if there are people out there who are listening that, you know, military, that are looking to get into law enforcement, this is something you can do early on in your career and hopefully mitigate having that develop, that because after years and years and years, that animosity will develop. If you're just coming home saying everything's fine, everything's not fine, you're trying to deal with it on your own while your spouse is wondering why they can't help you, animosity starts developing on both sides. Right. So just have that discussion, develop, you know, determine the parameters of what your spouse is willing to hear. Cause I've come home and said, this is going on. And my wife is like, oh, well, that's a little bit too much. I don't need to know that much detail, but she wanted to know the situation that I was dealing with. Right.
Right.
So you don't necessarily have to give all the gory details of what's happening, but your spouse does want to know, and they do want to be there to help you along the way. But same with family, your parents, you know, there's even though you're an adult, you've been through all these things, your parents are still your parents. They still have that desire to protect you and be there for you. Your friends, you're one of the best things that I could recommend is, regardless of what career field you're in, your friends that are not in that career field. So if you have friends, you're in the military and you have friends from childhood friends that never went military, continue to pursue those relationships because it grounds you. You know, we get insulated in our profession, right? We think that everything is like this all the time, when it's actually not, right? There are those people who are not first responders, those people who are not military or combat vets that you have friendships with that can help ground you and remind you that it's not all bad. Life is not all bad. There are still good things in this world. So,
yeah, and that's hard sometimes to keep those kind of relationships when you go off different directions, like especially, you know, thinking about the people who graduate high school, one friend goes off to college, the other person goes off to the military, and they're in two different places of their lives. They make other relationships, but with, yep. You know, when we were younger, social media wasn't a thing, nope. You know, so that was, it was a lot harder to keep those relationships together. Yes. And now, I mean, there is social media, there's email, everyone's got a phone,
right.
They have it with them constantly. Yep. You can send them a text message. You can keep that relationship going, even if you're on other sides of the country, other sides of the world, even.
Right.
You can keep those relationships going. And you're right. When you have somebody who is not dealing with the doom and gloom all the time in their day-to-day lives, they're going to have a totally different perspective than somebody who is dealing with all of that stuff in their day-to-day. So yeah, keep those relationships. So that way, you know, you can see, it's not all bad. You know, there is some good out there, right?
Yep. Yeah. And not just continue those relationships, but kind of pursue them in a way. Doesn't have to be a lot of time, but just like you said, you know, send a text.
Yeah.
Send an email. Yeah. I remember when I deployed, if we were going to call home, we had to stand in line while the Navy set up pay phones. You didn't even get a free phone call. They set up pay phones next to the ship and you had to stand in line and wait your turn. You had to buy a calling card, prepaid calling card, so you can call your family back home. There was no such thing as internet, you know, Wi-Fi. I mean, that was what like high speed, like spec op people were dealing with, you know, because when I was with the Marines, I was on a sniper platoon. And I remember they were experimenting with the device that would strap on your forearm, and it was like this big, right? Almost your entire forearm. And it had a keyboard. It would flip up and it would, you know, you would type your message, send, and it would go by satellite to where you needed to send it to. And then you'd get a response. Basically it was the first iteration of text messaging, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to move on to the next part of your book and talk about some of the darker sides of the job. You go into some of the detail of things like trauma and loss, death, grief. And I know there's a lot of people out there, especially from a Christian standpoint, you know, a religious standpoint, they have a lot of questions with regards to this. And I think your book covered these topics fairly well. So what is your advice for kind of handling these situations while, you know, on the job?
Good question. The best advice I can give is for anybody, whether you're religious or not, but anybody to understand that these bad things are going to happen, whether you're in law enforcement, the military or not. I mean, bad things happen to people. We see it all the time in the news. You know, the common question is why do bad things happen to good people, right? Well, law enforcement, firefighters, first responders in any field, military, we voluntarily put ourselves into those positions. So if you're in these fields and you think that you're going to have this career of, you know, your 9 to 5 day in, day out is going to be great. You're going to, you know, get away scot-free without seeing death or these destroyed, destruction, trauma, violence. You're probably kidding yourself, right? So the biggest advice that I could give is go back to the scriptures and see what it says about these things. These things are horrible events to be a part of and process, but they're necessary for our growth. I mean, and that's one of the reasons why bad things happen to good people, is because without the bad things in our life, then the good things just become normal things. And we stop appreciating the good. We stop appreciating the beauty of the world around us. So we have, but going back to scripture and seeing, you know, this wisdom from thousands of years ago, when, you know, that have helped people over the course of millennia, that whether you believe as a Christian or just are spiritual or maybe a different faith, but or even atheist, these things can help you. I'm not necessarily saying that you know, you need to become a Christian to understand these things, but these things will definitely help you kind of process and understand why these things are occurring. And just like working out, right? You work out, you keep your body physically fit so that not just to look good or not just to have an intimidating presence, but the ultimate reason why you work out in these professions is so that you're physically capable of dealing with a violent person or, you know, somebody that's having some kind of narcotic episode or even just a mental breakdown and not acting normally, right? That's actually why you do it. The same thing holds true with the years, and it helps prepare your mind for when you have to deal with it.
Yeah. And I remember myself looking back to my time in Afghanistan, and, you know, for a lot of the listeners know this, I'm not sure how much you're familiar with my background, my story and everything, but, you know, I lost my younger brother. He was in Afghanistan and he was killed in action. And I remember just thinking to myself, why him? Like, why would God decide to take him? He was 25 years old. He had his whole life ahead of him. But why? Mm-hmm. To me, I just couldn't wrap my head around that. And I actually verbally said this out loud. I was like, why him? Or why did you have to take him? And it was a strange thing that happened, but I had this weird calm feeling come over me. And it was like, I may not know the answers to all of these questions that I'm asking, like, why him? But I just have to be okay with that. And I have to have faith in knowing that whatever the reason is, it's a good reason, that there's something bigger and better out there, and that the reason is a good reason, that there is something positive that will come of this, as much as that pains me to even say that to this day,
right?
You know,
right?
Because it's a terrible thing. Like, I would do anything to have my brother back, but knowing that there's something bigger out there in a weird way is sort of calming and reassuring. And just knowing that it's not just about me and my immediate circle, my immediate family, my immediate whatever, kind of in a strange way has a calming effect about it, you know? And so, yeah, I think going back to scriptures, and even, like you said, you don't necessarily have to be a Christian to understand this type of stuff. And other people have written about a lot of these concepts in a non-biblical way, but going back and trying to understand that there is something bigger out there than just us. And that might be a way to deal with this stuff, right?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, I did know your story, and, you know, I'm sorry for your loss and your family's loss. And at the same time, your family service to this country is amazing. And I appreciate it and wanted to thank you for that. I didn't get to do that before. And not to mitigate your story and what happened with you and your brother, but as a Christian, as a believe, you know, professing Christian for a long time, I still have experienced loss. We have two of our granddaughters. We had a granddaughter who passed away in her sleep 2 months before her second birthday. And a year later, my same daughter, a year later, her 4-day-old baby died in the hospital. So we lost two grandkids within a year. And it's devastating. It's absolutely devastating. And even being, you know, a professing Christian for most of my adult life, I still would shout that out. Why did this happen? Why to these, especially these two young babies who had their full life ahead of them? And the same thing, through scripture, through prayer, through, you know, talking with people who are older than me who have lost people as well, and just mental. I did come to the real same realization. It, as bad as it was to go through this, and it's still bad. We still have days where, like, my wife will just cry. Mm-hmm. You know, something will come up, and you know, as bad as that is, we know with every fiber know that it was for good, for some reason. We still don't know why, but some reason it was for good. But to bring it less personal, so I told you before, I was in Somalia, so I was med boarded right before the war on terror started. So my combat experience was that one time, like before 9/11, if you were in the military and you went to combat, it was probably the only time in like a 20-year career that you would do it. Very few people had more than one, right? Mm-hmm. And so, right, like Jocko, I don't know if you listen to Jocko, but like Jocko says, it was the one big mission, right, that you would have gotten into. And that was what Somalia was for us. But so I guess the point I'm trying to make is, even before long-term sustained combat, you know, I was a corpsman. In the first year I was in the military, I went to four friends' funerals. So you're going to experience death. You're going to experience trauma. You're going to experience bad things happening to good people, whether you're in sustained combat or not.
Right.
These
things that happen to bad things that happen to good people, like you said, they're going to happen whether you're there or not. So just realize that it's not because you were there that this bad thing happened. It, you know, if you're, let's just take it back for a second, move it away from combat. And if you're a firefighter and you're pulling up on a scene of a car crash, you know, a fatal car crash, that car crash was going to happen whether you decided to become a firefighter or not. Okay. If you decided to go off and do something else, become a, I don't know, whatever, you know, some other profession, he was going to arrive at that scene and have to remove those bodies from that vehicle. And,
correct,
you know, so it's not because of you. There's nothing that you do is going to prevent something like an accident or terrorism or whatever. You're not going, right, to prevent these things from happening. They do happen. And that's the reason why you put on that uniform and go, that's to, right, work every day. Right.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, when I got into the federal side of things and stopped being a local sheriff's deputy, I still kept in contact with several of my friends from the sheriff's department. And just like you said, there's still accidents, there's still shootings, there's still assaults, there's still robberies, there's still theft going on. Just because I'm not there to take those calls or to help, you know, do what I can in that community, it's still going on. And it's going to go on no matter what job you have. And it's going to go on whether you're you know, a professing Christian or not. The whole point of the book was to help people in these professions understand and deal with these situations. Yeah. I think it's applicable to people outside of these professions as well, but it was primarily written for military veterans, first responders, because there are specific things that are mentioned and referenced in the Bible for these things that you deal with. So,
right. And, you know, I don't want to give too much of the book away as far as the nitty gritty content and the details and all that stuff. I do want people to go out and get it because, you know, I know, you know, selling the book may not be the primary reason why you wrote the book, but having a copy of the book, you know, someone can listen to this podcast today and be like, yeah, all this stuff sounds great and everything. And, you know, they may not need to tap into the wisdom that you're putting out there in your book for a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years from now.
Right.
But if they have a copy of this book, it's something they can go back to. It's something that will last longer than this one episode that they'll have to now go back and search and try to figure out where they heard it from. Right. So, right. So I do want to encourage people to get a copy of the book. So I don't want to, you know, dive into the deepest of right. details on these topics. But, you know, again, I do want people to get out there and get a copy of the book. But before we do kind of wrap up anything here, I know that, you know, obviously no matter what profession you go into, any first responder field, military, at some point that there's an end date to your time wearing that yes. uniform, whatever that uniform is. And in my experience with this podcast, with the people I've talked to, whether it's on the podcast or other people who've reached out to me, there is a lot of times where people just struggle to figure out what's next. They associate their identity with that uniform that they wore for so many years, and they have trouble taking the uniform off and putting the civilian uniform on, right? And so how can we use our experiences that we had during our careers, whatever the career may be, to make our communities that we live in a better place after the fact, after we've retired?
That's so insightful, especially in law enforcement, because that's my world. Your occupation becomes your sole identity and self-worth a lot of times. I see it all the time, and I have friends that are still doing the job, the air marshal job, and they're good at it, they're capable, but they were eligible to retire years ago, but they just can't seem to figure out that there's life afterwards. And leaving and retiring doesn't make you any less capable. There are so many things out there, especially now, there are so many things out there that you can get into. And I'm not just talking about, you can volunteer if you want, but there are organizations that you can get involved with. You know, a lot of military personnel retire and then will get involved with VFW or, you know, DAV or something like that, which is great. We need especially the ones that get in and volunteer at the local level. But there are people, you know, the whole Epstein Island stuff and the whole, you know, human trafficking situation that has really come to the forefront in the last year or so, 2 years. There are dozens of organizations out there that would, you know, they would be ecstatic to have the skills that you possess come to their organization and continue using those skills that you possess in just shifting focus. And it doesn't, you know, obviously these are just like suggestions, but ultimately the biggest thing that people have to understand when they're getting close to that time to retire is it's the season in life that's what you're supposed to do. You've worked all these years, you've broken your body, I'm not going to say you've broken your mind or your spirit, but it gets bent, it gets bruised, it gets banged up for sure in these professions. And the goal of that is to retire and then enjoy those years you have left with the people that you care about. And I've known people who have retired. One of my friends right now is, he's on a year trip. He's just driving around the country, going from RV spot to RV spot, taking it easy. You know, he spends a couple of days at one place. If he likes it, he'll extend. If he doesn't, he's off to the next, you know? I mean, you can do something like that. It's, the point is you can do anything you want. And, but that's what's so great about it. You've earned that. It's not these guys who are taking a gap year in between high school and college to go find themselves. It's, you're not like that, you know. And you've heard people make fun of those people, right?
For sure. Yep.
Yeah. So so again, it's mindset. It's how you're approaching the living the life that you are intended to live in the season that you're in.
Right. And it's being present in the current moment, right? It's not,
yes.
It's not reliving the past. It's not dreaming about a better future that may or may not ever exist. You know, it's being present and enjoying the here and now, enjoying what you have right now, the people who are in your lives, your spouse, yeah, your children, your grandchildren, other friends, family, neighbors that might be around you, just enjoying their company and their presence, and right, not doom scrolling through social media and, you know, right, just,
yeah,
letting the doom and gloom of the world, you know, consume you. And that's not helpful. But doing things like the things that you mentioned, I think are incredible. The first thing that came to mind when you mentioned, you know, the Epstein Island and the, you know, the human trafficking situation is military first responders. One thing that we all have in common is we kind of look at ourselves as helpers, as the protectors, so things like that, right? And there are innocent people out there who are in need of protecting. They need help.
Yes.
And that it serves another purpose. And this is not like a selfish thing, but a lot of times when you get out of the military or whatever your career is, you feel like you lost your sense of purpose. And right, if you're out there and you're out protecting and you're helping these people who need the help, boom, there you go. Now you found, yeah, your sense of purpose all over again. You may absolutely not have a family even to go home to. And, you know, we're talking, right, about, you know, be present with your spouse or your kids. You may not have those, and that's fine. Right. I mean, everyone has different situations, right? Right. But I think all of us can feel some sympathy for those types of people who are stuck in this situation where they can't get out. And if you can be
absolutely
the person who's there to help them, then, I mean, more power to you, right?
Right, absolutely. And that's what a lot of these organizations, so now we're kind of on the human trafficking side of stuff. A lot, sure, of the organizations doing that are retired military, federal and local law enforcement agents who retired, still needed something to fulfill themselves and what you were saying, to protect, saw this massive, massive hole. Because, I mean, it unfortunately, a lot of local law enforcement is just woefully under-trained in how to spot and deal with and tackle that issue. But so you get these people that get into retirement, they start their own companies going and doing that. And it doesn't have to be necessarily human trafficking. I have a really good friend who in his retirement became a private investigator. And, you know, and he did very well in it. But that protector role, it doesn't just go away when you hang up the uniform.
Right.
But you can't, obviously, you're not going to be able to protect in the way that you have been for the last 20, 25, 30 years or more. But what you can do is go and protect in a different way. Maybe instead of going and fighting human traffickers or, you know, drug runners or whatever, maybe you go and start mentoring some neighborhood kids, you know? So how many stories have you heard where kids were kind of starting to go down the wrong path, but they were interested in the military? And some old, crusty, retired you know, E8 that lived down the block that really kind of marginally knew the parents, started mentoring those kids and kept them from a life of crime, got them ready to go into the military, and then they blossomed from there, right?
Yeah.
He says you can't do something like that.
You know? And that would be a beautiful thing, you know, if more people got out of their houses and interacted with their neighbors and actually got to know the people in their neighborhood and some of the things that were going on. I mean, yeah, there are people who are struggling. They don't know, they don't know where to find themselves, where
right.
the next thing is. And, you know, would you rather have the drug dealer who lives on the opposite side of the street, or would you rather have the retired veteran or law enforcement officer
right.
be the mentor for that kid, right? And
right.
kind of help take them under their wing and, you know, show them, you know, a life that's worth living and that is, you know, something to be proud of, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that certainly seems like a pretty easy thing to do. It may be easier said than done to get started, right? Especially these days when you might have an older guy, you know, going and talking to younger kids, people start looking at
right,
it kind of funny.
Right.
But if you can develop those relationships with the parents and then be like, well, hey, can I help this kid out and show them the right path? You know, that might be something that's, you know, a little easier to do. So,
right.
You know, interesting perspective though. I like that. Before we wrap this up, I know your book is not yet out and I'm going to help promote it once when it does come out so that the listeners who are hearing the story now and they're like, you know, I want to get a copy of this book. It just doesn't exist yet. So obviously can't get it right now, but obviously it's going to be out in a little bit here. Do you have a estimated time when the book is scheduled to be released?
Yeah. Late spring of this year of 2023. Okay. So I'm thinking I actually need to get back with the publisher, but I'm thinking probably May timeframe.
Perfect. Well, we will definitely get this book promoted once when it comes out, you know, and even I'd be happy to have you back on to, you know, share a little bit more about the book once when it's out, you know, if you want. So we'll do that. But John, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you and learning about your career, your background and the book that you've written. You know, I think it's really phenomenal and I think it's going to help a lot of people. So I really appreciate everything that you've done.
Thank you, sir. The privilege was mine. I had a great time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Son, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.